Words are a vital part of how we communicate, but the words we use change over time. Sometimes it's a generational shift, and in other situations, they better reflect new developments in current events or advanced technologies. And Merriam-Webster has unveiled a new feature, Time Traveler, that lets you look up a word and see when it first became part of the vernacular. To help us understand all of that a lot better, I'm joined by Cindy Sturt-Sridharan. She's an associate professor at ASU School of Human Evolution and Social Change. Cindy, why do our words change so much, and why is our vocabulary affected by what's going on in the broader world?
I think that is the really important question to ask. And trying to figure that out, though, is also a very difficult thing to ascertain. I think one thing that springs to mind immediately is when new things are introduced to us, we need new ways to talk about them. So we have some choices when that happens. We can recycle words that already exist in our language and give them new meanings or broaden or narrow the meanings, or we can create brand new words. And creating brand new words can be literally what we might call neologisms, or a novel word, one that no one has ever heard before and someone comes up with it. Or we can take apart pieces of other words and put them back together to create a new meaning, and that gets put out there. And with any luck, it gets picked up and off it runs.
Now, does that make sense to you, I guess, that there is a feeling among some, maybe a small percentage, that words are like pieces of art in and of themselves, and there should be something deeper to them? Maybe those are the words that last a lot longer. How does that fit when we're sort of jamming words together? It almost sounds less poetic and more so like an engineer.
Yeah, I agree with you. There is this desire to want words to remain static or unchangeable. We like the idea, I think, of being able to pick up a book or listen to something from the past and think, oh, I know exactly what that means because our words have stayed the same. But we're humans, and humans do a lot of manipulation with everything around them. So in that sense, we can think about language more like an engineer might, that is, as tools to be used and drawn upon. But I think there are ways that we can think about them as art as well.
How much do new words tell us about an era? Does it really reflect anything more than just a moment in time?
Well, I think it reflects a moment in time. And then I think if you trace sort of the life history of that word that you might pick out, you begin to see how that moment in time actually became a generation or a lifetime. And I do find that to be really fascinating in thinking about what has recently come out, in thinking about new words that get formed or old words that have been refound, as it were. It's interesting to think about the time period of that and what it indicates about not just the people, but what's going on. And again, technology becomes really central to this conversation as we've had the boom of IT sorts of words. But I also just want to say that there are other words that don't change, right? So we can think of our basic everyday needs, which are sort of an interesting set of universals that people use often to actually measure language change. Mm-hmm. So we can think about words like water or air or kinship terms that may or may not change over time. And why don't those change? I don't have an answer to that question, but I think it's also an interesting question to think about the words that are really stable. And how do we get the stability against this rapid change is really fascinating.
Let's take a look at some of the interesting words that have been a part of, I'm thinking, American society.
Okay.
So 1970, unmacho. So unmacho means you're not macho, I guess.
Exactly.
So that means macho preceded unmacho?
Yes. So this is the interesting thing to me is that, so in 1970, in theory, unmacho shows up. And so it suggests actually that we had already brought in macho. And I began to think, like, why did we bring in macho? And I'm sure there's a host of contextual reasons of why we did that. But one idea is that there's just not that great of a English term to sort of capture this kind of masculinity mm-hmm. that we associate with a Latino culture. And so if someone is not macho, we actually did a really interesting thing here. We took that un, which means not, and we slapped it onto macho, and we said, now I know how to talk about these people who aren't macho. I can just say they're unmacho. And I just thought that was a great example of both bringing in a word from another language, mm-hmm. but attaching one of our own prefixes to it to do the sort of meaning that we desire.
All right, let me go to 1985. Step aerobics is an interesting term. Now that's something, I think, has that stuck with us or no?
Well, I actually wondered that myself. Is step aerobics still around? And I do think it, you can find traces of it. I'm not sure if people advertise anymore that they're offering classes in it. So in 1985, I think there was a huge boom, and you would go and you could go to the gym and they would have these huge steps, some huger than others, taller than others, and you could exercise in this way. I'm not even sure.
Now, were they wearing leg warmers, though?
Right. Were they wearing leg warmers or tights or what? Yes. And what's interesting about this one as well is that it presumes that there was something called aerobics prior to this, right? And then something changed about the aerobics, and we had to modify it by adding this word step. Mm-hmm. And so it also captures, again, this ability where our language and users of the language have a very broad meaning for something. Aerobics, it's some sort of physical exercise. But now we've added something to make it special, partly marketing is my guess. And we may now have this phrase of step aerobics.
1999, now these are two that are definitely still with us, blog and snark. Where does snark come from?
So I was using the Oxford English Dictionary, which is not very American of me, but it the reason I really like the Oxford English Dictionary is that it has a bunch of etymology tabs, so it's very easy for me to use. It does not show up in the Oxford English Dictionary as the same meaning that we use it as. So snark has a meaning, right, of being sarcastic or having a quick comeback and a little bit biting. It's typically not necessarily mean or unkind, but it's a bit snippy, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And snark is very much alive. I would have put it as more recently. It was interesting to me to see that it was 1999. I feel I might be behind the curve on my use of snark. As a term, yes.
Okay, if you're behind the curve, Cindy, where am I? Cindy, thanks so much. Nice to meet you.
Thank you. Nice to meet you, too.
Cindy Sturt-Streeteron is an associate professor in ASU School of Human Evolution and Social Change.